сонце заходить, гори чорніють, пташечка дивне. Заточо на Україну. Лину я лину, гумагаю, і ніде серце відпочиває. Чорніє поле, і гай гори, на синє небо. Зоре, і сльози кануть. Чи ти зійшла, чи на країні, чи очікає тебе шукають. На небі синім, чи забувають, коли забуть. Мою долинку старі не чули, ай про мою долинку старі не чули. Щоб і не чули, ой, про мою доленьку, щоб і не чули.
Лай-лай-лай-лай, лай-лай-лай-лай, о-о-о-о-о.
And opening our show with a bit of a blast to the past and a nod to Taras Shevchenko. That was Dumka from Edmonton from a recording made back in 1982. The album is Soundscape and the song was Shevchenko's poetry put to music and the song was Sonce Zachodit, Sunset. Добрий вечір! Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопрограмі «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння. При мікрофоні Павліна, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there and welcome to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. I'm Павліна, your host. Thank you so much for joining me. We've got a great program lined up for you. Sylvia Molnar will be along with another great recipe as well. We've got a book review by Myra Junik, and she'll be reviewing the latest book by children's author Marcia Skripik, and it is set in post-World War II Ukraine, and it is called Underground Soldier. As well, Marcia herself will be joining us, and she'll be talking about the book that was nominated for the Kobzar Award, which the awards just took place a couple of weeks ago, and Marcia was shortlisted for that award, and she'll be talking about that as well as some of the parallels to the wars that she's been writing about in the past and the one that is going on right now in Ukraine. As well, Stefan Andrusiak will have another charming Rushnichok story for us, and so stay tuned for that as well. We'll have our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And coming up next is another throwback to the past, to the 1980s, Vika Vrodi. And this is a song that is going out to Mr. Putin and his ilk. And it is called Hanba, for shame.
Don't say.
Thanks to the foresight and generosity of its donors, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been investing in the future of the Ukrainian-Canadian community for the past 50 years. Since 1963, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been funding initiatives that strengthen our Ukrainian-Canadian identity and enhance our Ukrainian-Canadian cultural heritage. These include fine and performing artists and arts groups, museums, cultural centers, education, as well as authors, journalists, and the Ukrainian-Canadian media, including this program. The foundation strives to become the premier not-for-profit foundation in a Canada which acknowledges the Ukrainian-Canadian community as a fundamental component of Canadian society. Nash Holis listeners are encouraged to support this vision through continued donations into the future. To apply for grants, make a donation, or for more information, contact the Shevchenko Foundation at 204-944-9128, toll-free 1-866-524-5314, or visit shevchenkofoundation.com. From Ukraine, that was Otvinta and Oy Kurela Baba Zhuravlya. And now, Ukrainian food flair with Sylvia Molnar. Tips for Ukrainian cooking.
Hello. In Ukraine, sour cream or smetana is used in large quantities, especially for baking, a great specialty. Coffee cake is a rich, cake-like bread, usually eaten for breakfast or brunch. They can be made with yeast, but those using baking powder or soda take less time and are delicious. Get your pans ready for a classic Ukrainian favorite, sour cream coffee cake. You'll need the following ingredients. For the batter, you'll need 3/4 cup butter, 1.5 cups sugar, 3 eggs beaten, 1.5 cups thick sour cream, 1 teaspoon vanilla, 1.5 teaspoons baking soda, 1 teaspoon baking powder, 2.25 cups flour. And for the filling, mix 1/2 cup brown sugar, 2 teaspoons cinnamon, 1/2 cup of chopped walnuts. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit and grease and flour a 9-inch square pan. Blend the first 5 ingredients, then mix and add the 3 dry ingredients. Pour 1/2 the batter into the pan and sprinkle 1/2 the filling over the batter. Cover with the rest of the batter and then the remaining filling on top. Bake for 45 minutes or until done when tested. This cake is lovely served warm or at room temperature. Try it. It's Ukrainian.
Thanks, Sylvia, for sharing your Ukrainian culinary expertise on Ukrainian Food Flair here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio.
This is Stefan Andrusiak from Rushnechok, and you're listening to Nash Holos with host Paulette McQuarrie. Дорогі слухачі, від всіх наших членів оркестри Рушничок, великий привіт вам! Ви слухаєте радіопередачу «Наш голос».
Down through the centuries, names may change, but true meanings last. Take the city of Leopolis, Lemberg, Lvov, Lvov, Lviv. There are as many names for Lviv as it has had invaders. Germany, Russia, Poland occupied it twice. Lviv has been called the Paris of Eastern Europe, the jewel of Western Ukraine. Сьогодні я присвячую нашу пісню витривалим людям міста Львів. The oldest sections of this resilient city are now part of a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It is a university town and a cultural center with opera, ballet, even a philharmonic. And here it was that the songwriting team of Neyankivsky and Veselovsky told the story of Katerinka. Katerinka is the name of a young woman, but a Katerinka is also the name of a street organ. It was once played by a traveling entertainer who amused passers-by hoping to earn some of their spare change. Today we call such performers buskers. Listen to the song's delightful play on words. In the city of Lviv, by the market, he churns and turns his Katerinka. Oh, Katerinka, my love, the Katerinka player is playing our song about fate and love. Тільки ти одна єдина. You are my one and only Katerinka. After recording the song, Rushnichok could have left well enough alone and simply translated Katerinka phonetically, but we thought it important to inject a bit of the song's romance into the title. We could have called it Organ Grinder, but that would have been accurate yet a little harsh, so we decided to call it Concertina, which of course is a tiny button accordion. Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I know now that, like the name of this great city of Lviv, the best things in life should simply be called what they are, in the language of the people who hold them closest to their hearts. Here from iTunes and Rushnichok, Volume 4, the city is Lviv, the song is Katerinka.
В місті Львові там на ринку крутить-крутить Катеринку. Катеринка, Катеринку крутить навіть і на ринку. Чи для спорту, чи для жарту, де два леви мають варту, де студні стоять чотири, в них вода, мов, срібло шкіре. Ах, дівча моє, дівчино, любка, люба, Катерино, Катеринко, Катерино, наша музика на ринку, наша доля, все кохання, юність, радість, милування. Тільки ти одна єдина, Катеринко, Катерино. Чути ратуш
п'є годину, Катеринка в ринку грає, всіх до себе закликає. Льоскопуйте, добрі люди, щастя доля щось добуде, де ж така нагода друга, льос вам витягне папуга. Ох, дівча моє, дівчино, любка, люба, Катерино, Катеринко, Катерино, наша музика на ринку, наша доля, все кохання, юність, радість, милування, тільки ти одна єдина, Катеринко, Катерино.
Welcome to Knyzhka Corner, book reviews by Myra Junik, Ukrainian stories in English.
In this edition of Knyzhka Corner, we will be discussing Marcia Forchuk-Skripluk's new novel, Underground Soldier. Underground Soldier is a companion novel to Skripluk's two award-winning novels, Stolen Child and Making Bombs for Hitler. In this novel, Skripluk explores the life of fugitives from Nazi prison camps. It also gives readers a portrait of the courageous Ukrainian insurgent army, the UPA, which was caught between two terrible enemies in the Second World War, the Soviets and the Nazis. Luka Barukovich is a teenager who spent many long and harsh months in a Nazi slave camp. He survives with the help of friends. One of his closest friends is Lida. She thought of me as a big brother, Luka, and I loved her with all my heart. Luka escapes the slave camp by lying in a truck full of dead bodies. After he is free, he constantly worries about what is happening to his friend Lida. As he wanders the countryside, Luka is determined to return to Kyiv. He wants to find his father, even though he knows that his father is in Siberia. He fears both the Nazis and the Soviets. After finding temporary shelter with sympathetic German farmers, Luka realizes he must move on in order to survive. He meets a girl named Martina in the wilderness, who escaped a massacre in her village of Lidice in Czechoslovakia. The two travel together until they are saved from death at the front by members of the UPA. They spend weeks tending the wounded in an underground hospital and defending the village of Zhuraki. In the process, they learn that the UPA is fighting against the Nazis and the Soviets for equality of all citizens, regardless of age, sex, religion, or nationality. Will Luka ever be reunited with Lida and his family? Skripluk based her novel on the real-life experiences of Petra Potichny, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at McMaster University, who joined the UPA when he was 14. He is the editor-in-chief of Litopis UPA, which is a collection of 115 volumes of documents about the UPA. The plot of Underground Soldier is fast-moving. It is told as a chronological narrative interspersed with flashbacks. Both male and female readers will be interested in the fast-paced and heart-stopping events of this novel. Through the courageous actions of Luka, readers will be able to relate to the actual events of World War II. In the process, they will learn about prison camps in Nazi Germany, Soviet oppression in Ukraine, the atrocities of Babyn Yar and Bukovina, as well as the aftermath of World War II. There is also a very useful glossary of terms at the end of this book. Although the novel can stand alone, readers who have read the other two novels in this series will have a better appreciation for the characters and events of the background narrative. If readers haven't read Stolen Child and Making Bombs for Hitler yet, they will definitely want to do so after reading this book. Marcia Forchuk-Skripluk has received numerous awards and honors for her picture books and young adult novels. including Aram's Choice, which was nominated for the Canadian Library Association Book of the Year for Children in 2007. In 2008, Marcia was awarded the Order of Princess Olha by Ukrainian President Yushchenko in recognition of the picture book Enough, which described the Holodomor that claimed millions of lives in the 1930s. Marcia's novel, Making Bombs for Hitler, won the Silver Birch Award in 2012 and was on the 2014 shortlist for the Kobzar Literary Award. Skripuk's newest novel, Underground Soldier, gives readers of all ages a unique perspective into the events of the Second World War. It will shine a light on a forgotten piece of history for readers of all ages. It is available at Chapters and Amazon.
Thanks, Myra. Join us again soon for another edition of Konishka Corner, book reviews by Myra Junik, here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. From a CD called Taras Shevchenko, From Poetry to Art Song, that was one of a compilation of songs of Shevchenko's poetry put to music, and that song was Sadok Vishnevi Kolochate, The Cherry Orchard by the House, and it was performed for you by Benjamin Butterfield. Ви слухаєте українську радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння на багатомовній радіостанції АМ-1320 у місті Ванкувері. And you're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio on AM-1320 CHMB Vancouver. – Marcia Skripik is the author of many children's and young adult fiction books. She's a writing machine, and recently she was nominated for the Kobzer Literary Award for her book Making Bombs for Hitler. It's the second in a trilogy of a story set in World War II Ukraine. Marcia joins us on the line now to talk about that and about war and her books. Marcia, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Paulette. It's always a pleasure.
It is. So you're just off from the Kobzer Awards. Just happened last week, and it was quite the event from what I read on Facebook and what you've been telling me.
Oh, it was amazing. They spend so much time and effort to make everything perfect. The volunteer committee and the judges and everybody. It was, you know, a sit-down dinner, $250 a ticket, and it was sold out. But it was a five-course dinner, and each course was themed after one of the five shortlisted works. So for me, for Making Bombs for Hitler, which was set during World War II and is about a young girl taken as a slave laborer, they actually had her soup kitchen. And in the soup kitchen, there was a hierarchy of nutrition depending on what race you were. And so they had the five different pots of soup, you know, some with just cabbage in it if you were called an Eastern worker, or as they called them, Russians, even though they were Ukrainians. Or if you were German or Aryan, then you got, you know, meat in your soup. And so they had all these as when you walked in your finery and everything else, they had this soup kitchen thing set up as hors d'oeuvres.
Wow.
And so, yeah, people would get little shot glasses of various kinds of root broth puree with, like, kale chips. Very elegant, but, you know, all on the theme of thin gruel soup.
Wow.
So it was really neat. They also had on each of the tables, they had a floral arrangement that also incorporated aspects of different books. So for Barbara Sapergia's Bread and Salt, which is set during World War I internment of Ukrainians, they had a barbed wire that wrapped around a sheaf of wheat. And for my book, they had an OSK badge, you know, a slave laborer badge with a needle and thread put through it, and also a battered metal spoon that Lita was issued in the book. So really, it was just absolutely spectacular, everything that they did.
Well, congratulations on being nominated. I think, you know, many people in their hearts, you certainly are a winner, and thank you so much for doing these books. You take on a very, very difficult subject for your books, for kids.
Well, the difficult subjects call to me. Many writers are told, or, you know, that there is this theory that you should write what you know, and I do not agree with that at all. I like to write what I want to know about, and so I will write books about things that I haven't been able to read about in books. And so I do a great deal of research before I write a book. Any given topic that I write about takes about 10 years for me to research. So, you know, I've got my World War II trilogy. It did take 10 years for the three of them in terms of research. But it's not a topic that I knew a lot about before I started doing all the research. And to me, it's an important thing. Someone has to write about the bits of history that have been politically forgotten. And I guess I'm one of these people who is going to do that.
Now, you started out writing about the Armenian genocide, and I think you said you had 10 years worth of material that you had acquired in the course of you'd written articles, and had started to write a huge novel, and it turned out to several books on the Armenian genocide.
Yes, I've actually written five works of fiction on the Armenian genocide. So three young adult novels and two books for younger children, two illustrated chapter books for younger children. So I've actually written more works of fiction on the Armenian genocide than anyone in the English-speaking world, which is bizarre because I am not Armenian. But one of the reasons that I decided to write about that topic in novel form before I ever wrote on a Ukrainian topic is because I feel very strongly that if I want someone to step into the shoes of my heritage, I must be willing to step into the shoes of other people's heritage as well. Because, you know, it's not all about us. It's not all about Ukrainians, or, you know, I'm part Irish and part French. It's not all about me. I need to understand other people as well. And so I've written books about a Vietnamese orphan. I've written two books. They're narrative nonfiction about a Vietnamese orphan who has airlifted to Canada. I have a book coming out in August, and it's about an Alevi Kurd who came to Canada just before World War I. It's very, very important for me to write about a variety of groups, not always just Ukrainians.
I recall you saying one time that we have to, Ukrainians in particular, have to get, and you probably meant this for anybody, you have to tell your own story, because if you don't, somebody else will tell it and they won't likely get it right.
That's true. You know, so on the one hand, I want to tell my own story in case someone else doesn't get it right. But on the other hand, too, there are many, many, many stories that have not been told, and the people have been cowed into silence. And so I feel a moral responsibility when I see stories that have not been told to become that person and to tell their story from their point of view. Like, you know, I have to leave behind my own preconceptions and become that person in the story and write that story. And for me, that transcends ethnicity. But what it means is that, you know, you really need to drop all the preconceptions. And it's a hard thing to do, but I feel very strongly that it needs to be done by more people. And I wish that there were a lot of people who were doing that, because really that's the way for us all to understand each other.
Well, it is. And I think that process that you just described, for me, having known you since you've, you know, started with your first book, which is Silver Threads, set in World War I in term, and it was about Ukrainians. And then you went on to write the Armenian genocide books and became, you know, well known for that. And you made a breakthrough writing on Ukrainian topics with Hope's War, which was a young adult novel. And you had started out, you had based it on Vasyl Odinsky, who was charged with being a Nazi.
Yes, that was Hope's War. That was 2001, Hope's War. And I had talked to the Odinsky family to do the research on that book.
Right. And you had started out thinking actually that, you know, he was accused, and that was, you changed the story because you were.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's very important when you're writing about a character or, you know, a historical time to be completely open to wherever it may lead you, even if where it may lead you will be uncomfortable for you as a writer.
Yeah, and as it turned out, it was very uncomfortable for a lot of readers as well.
That's true. And I mean, in the Odinsky case, I had my initial thought about that book was I was writing it from the granddaughter's point of view. And my initial premise was, can she still love her grandfather when she finds out he was a Nazi war criminal? But then what I found out as I was doing the research was that he wasn't. He was a victim of propaganda. And so the story became, can you believe what you see with your eyes? Is everything that you see with your eyes true? Or is there something else there? And so, you know, it just became a completely different book. And for me, that's also the beauty of writing, because if you know the ending of a book before you start writing it, it's really hard to have the energy or the interest to continue writing it. It's just like when you're reading a book, and if you know the ending, why bother read it?
Exactly, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now they're talking about being able to believe what we see with our eyes. We live in a different world now than 2001 when you were researching Hope's War. And we are watching a war unfold before our eyes right now on the other side of the world, in Ukraine.
Yes, we are. And I mean, that whole thing about can you believe what you see with your eyes is very much a part of what's happening now, because, you know, what Putin, I almost said Stalin, but what Putin is doing right now, I mean, he's controlling the news media, he's controlling television. So people in Russian-speaking Crimea are not seeing any news except what he is filtering to them. The same thing in Russia. They're not allowed to see anything other than the government-sanctioned version of events. And so what they think is that Kiev has been taken over by right-wing radicals and fascists, and nothing could be further from the truth. And if there are any fascists around, it's really the Russians and Putin who is trying to take over a foreign country, claiming that he's protecting ethnic Russians, which really has overshadowing reflections of what happened in World War II when Hitler said that he was going to protect Germans in Czechoslovakia, right?
Yeah.
So it's just really, really scary watching this. And so even in Crimea, you know, there are all these billboards all over the place. And so people see what they are supposedly choosing between. And one is this picture of the Russian flag, and it looks clean and fresh. And then on the other side, if they choose to stay with Ukraine, the picture is red with a black swastika through it. And so this is supposedly their choice, you know, clean Russia or this horrible swastika-riddled Ukraine. And so he's using all these symbols from World War II and tricking people into thinking that this is a reflection of reality, when really it's the most vile sort of hate propaganda, really, that hasn't been seen since the Cold War.
Right. And so now it is, Ukrainians are the Judenrat.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very distressing to be watching this. You know, I mean, you've studied it in history, and you must feel, as you said, that you're watching history now come to life, and not the good part of history.
Well, one thing that makes me a little bit happy is that Western media seems to have picked up on the fact that the Russians are providing all this propaganda. Like, they're not buying into Putin's propaganda. And for the most part,
some aren't.
You still do see some that are doing it, but in general, they're not buying into it. And, you know, whenever he says something, it'll be quote unquote, like they're saying that these are, you know, fascists or whatever, when really Putin's actions speak for themselves. And also the beauty of things happening now is that everybody has a phone in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a camera. Everybody can videotape exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really hard to have the mass propaganda be as effective as it had been in the past, because people will tweet it immediately.
Yeah.
So this is good. And so I think in the long run, he's not going to win the media war, because people can see with their own eyes what's happening.
Well, especially when you've got, you know, little grannies talking to the soldiers, and the soldiers knock them over.
I mean, I know. Yes, and clips like that go viral.
Mm-hmm.
And that says more than all the propaganda that Putin wants to spout.
And one of the nice things that is occurring is actually there are anti-Putin protests in Russia now. And many Russians,
yes,
are supporting the Maidan and supporting Ukraine and telling Russia, you know, get out of Russia, which is great.
Well, I mean, that's what Putin is really nervous about. When his buddy Yanukovych was kicked out of power and his buddy Yanukovych fled, it wasn't so much that he was worried about Ukraine as he was worried that the revolution would then move to Moscow.
Hmm.
And it has in the past, but he's just imprisoned people. But, I mean, in Kiev, how can you imprison a million people who are protesting?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he's afraid that there will be a critical mass of protesters in Moscow, just like there was in Kiev, and that he won't be able to handle it. That's his big fear. And so, you know, he has to clamp down in Crimea and the Russian-speaking parts of Ukraine to prove that he is more powerful than Yanukovych was. And so, you know, it's good to see Russian people understanding what's going on and standing up for their rights, too, because, you know, this isn't a Russian-Ukrainian thing. It's freedom versus totalitarianism.
Yeah,
that's what it is. And I feel very, very badly for the Russian people who have to be subjected to Putin, because they have been subjected to people like Putin,
mm-hmm,
for centuries. And when is it ever going to change? This is the opportunity Putin is weak and he's getting weaker because the longer he fights in Ukraine, the less money and resources he's going to have to control his own people.
Mm-hmm.
And even his own political party is not going to put up with, you know, the money just diminishing, melting away the way that it is in the stock markets and everything else. And also in the instability of them being able to sell their gas
mm-hmm.
and natural resources outside of their sphere, because people are just in the West are not going to trust him anymore. And so they're just going to lose their world market. He's committing suicide in a lot of ways. I just hope it happens quickly.
Yeah, I think we all do. Well, he is painting himself into a corner, and give him enough rope and hopefully hang himself. I've been thinking about this as we've been talking. You're a writer, and of course writers always write. And is this inspiring a story down the road, do you think, what's happening now?
I've been thinking about that. I'll have to let it sit in my head for a while, but yeah, there are stories here. It's terrifying to watch what's happening, but on the other hand, I am so proud of the Ukrainian people for their fortitude, their bravery. It's just stunning to see how well Ukrainian individuals are doing in terms of their own goodness.
And also just their knowledge of the world and their confidence. And you must see that, having written about, and we're both descended from First World War immigrants in Canada, when confidence was not common among our people. I mean, they were just a generation out of serfdom and in dire poverty coming over to Canada and facing mm-hmm. terrible discrimination, which you wrote about in your first book, Silver Threads, and you're going to be writing about again. And coincidentally, this is the centenary of the start of World War I and the internment operations in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Ukrainians came to Canada in the first place, was because of oppression. And I mean, Ukrainians have lived under oppression of various sorts for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because they have a different response to oppression than Russians do. And I think because they are closer to the West, and so they can see the glimmer of hope, they can see that there is an alternative. Whereas in Russia, it's harder because they're more enclosed, they're more isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything can be managed more for them. And so they're really more under the thumb of oppression
mm-hmm.
than Ukrainians are. But, you know, for Ukrainians, being able to be free, being able to be independent is the dream. And even for Ukrainians who come to Canada to have their home country free is very much a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Even for me, and I mean, my family came in 1912, but I still look at Ukraine as my home country. And every single day I'm watching the news and I'm just hoping and praying that things will go well for them, because they
mm-hmm.
deserve it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The Crimean situation that's going on right now, of course, is very distressing, and it relates somewhat to the book that you're currently writing on and that will be out fairly soon, hopefully.
Well, what's happening in Crimea is the story that has basically happened in all of the books that I've written about, because I always write about a group of people who are treated poorly because of their ethnicity. And so what's happening in Crimea right now, I mean, Russians may be in the majority, ethnic Russians may be in the majority in Crimea right now, but only because the Crimean Tatars were displaced. During Stalinist times, they were deported to Siberia, to work camps, concentration camps in Siberia, and they were replaced with ethnic Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the vote now is stacked, because, you know, if you're given property like the ethnic Russians were, of course they're going to feel very favorably towards Mother Russia, but the people who are displaced are silenced, because even the ones who have come back, there's not the critical mass, because so many of them died in Siberia.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the way that Putin fights. This is the way that Stalin before him fought, is with genocide, and that's the way that they're winning. And so, you know, many, many of my books, I write about genocide.
Now, there's no genocide during World War I, but there was a lot of tragedy here in Canada.
Well, I do write about genocide in World War I because I write about the Armenian genocide,
yes,
which happened in World War
I. 1915, right.
Yeah.
Right. The internment in Canada, though, affected, it wasn't genocidal, but it was certainly very cruel, towards innocent people that were just caught up because of the passports that they came to Canada on.
Yes. To put it into context, it would be better to be interned than to be over there where World War I was happening.
I suppose,
most of the people who were in, Ukraine, in World War I ended up dying. A lot of the people who were in the Ottoman Empire in World War I over there ended up dying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, context is everything. But still, to be put in a slave labor camp in the country that you fled to for freedom is its own horrible, sad irony.
Yeah. And we've heard from you the Ukrainian story in Silver Threads and also Diary. Prisoner in the Promised Land, right?
Yes, Prisoners in the Promised Land. Yes, that came out in 2007, and it was about a young girl, a young Ukrainian girl, who was interned at Spirit Lake. And in fact, it's Spirit Lake, Quebec, and in fact, the entire St. Michael's Church congregation was interned, including babies who were born in Canada, and some of them died up at the Spirit Lake internment camp. So, you know, that's pretty brutal conditions.
And it was mostly Ukrainians, probably about 80%, but there were others as well. And we're hearing now, thanks to writers like yourself, we're hearing the Ukrainian story, and it's become almost known as the Ukrainian internment, but there were others as well. And that's what you're working on right now.
Yes, I have a new book coming out in August, and it'll actually come out on August 22nd, which is the 100th anniversary of World War I. And it's called Dance of the Banished. And it's about an immigrant who came from the Ottoman Empire. He was labeled Turkish, but he was not Turkish. He was not ethnically Turkish. He had fled the Ottoman Empire, much like the Armenians had, and actually in the footsteps of the Armenians, because of religious persecution, and came to my hometown of Brantford, Ontario. He was an Alevi Kurd. Alevi is a religion. Kurd is an ethnic group. But when he came to Canada, it was assumed that he was Turkish because Canadians didn't know what Alevi Kurds were, and they assumed that he would be sympathetic to the Ottoman government. And so he and 99 other Alevi Kurds in Brantford, Ontario, were rounded up in the middle of the night, you know, this was from newspaper accounts, and put into the city jail, and then later they ended up being shipped, all of them, to Kapuskasing, Ontario, in the wilds of northern Ontario. So I'm writing about him, like one of these people, and that book will be coming out in August. But it's just like the Ukrainians in World War I. They were not called Ukrainians, they were called Austrians.
Yes,
and
right.
It was assumed that they would be loyal to Austria, but no, not really, because they were considered second, third-class citizens in Austria-Hungary as well. So it's the same story repeated. It's just another one that we just didn't know about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much for telling these stories so that you do increase our knowledge, or improve our vision of the world and open our minds in a way that haven't been opened before. So thank you very much for doing all that. And thanks for coming on and telling us about it.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to talk with you,
it is,
Paulette.
And congratulations again on the Cobser nomination. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Marcia Skripik, 2014 Cobser Award finalist, and as well as a prolific and popular children's and young adult writer. Marcia joined us from her home in Brantford, Ontario. Here's what's coming up this week in Vancouver's Ukrainian community. On Wednesdays, catch Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio broadcasting live from Nanaimo to north and central Vancouver Island, the Gulf Islands, the Sunshine Coast, Northwest Washington State, and Greater Vancouver. In our new two-hour time slot, 11:30 a.m. till 1:30 p.m. Pacific Time, Wednesdays on CHLY Radio Malaspina, 101.7 FM on the radio dial, and streaming online at chly.ca. You can get the links to the podcast for both the Nanaimo and this Vancouver edition at www.nashholos.com. This Friday, there will be a pierogi supper at the Ukrainian Community Society of Ivan Franko in Richmond. The hall is located at 5311 Francis Road between Railway and No. 2 Road. Doors are open from 5 till 7:30 p.m. For more information, call the society at 604-274-4119 or visit www.ivanfranco.ca. Contact TV airs on multicultural channel Omni 1 and on channel 8 on Shaw Cable Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. with a repeat broadcast the following Monday at noon. If you have announcements or story ideas you'd like aired on Contact, please email them at studio@contact.ca. That's studio@contact.ca. And at 5 p.m. Sunday evening, slip your radio dial right back here to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver and join me for another hour of fun here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In between broadcasts, you'll find upcoming events, program information, audio archives, podcast feeds, and much more at www.nashholos.com. Ну, ми вже скінчили нашу програму, вже час додому висказати до побачення, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Полиця без книжок, як хата без вінок. And our proverb of the week translates as, a shelf without books is like a house without windows. Well, that just about wraps it up for another program here on Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio. If you'd like to catch the podcast of this program or any previous programs that you may have missed or would like to hear again, just go to our website, www.nashholos.com, and click on the RSS feed there. So with that, we've got one more song to leave you with, and that is by The Female Beat from their first CD, The Female Beat, and The Beat Goes On, and Hot Kolomeka. I'm Pavlina. Thanks so much for joining me. On behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and AM 1320, thanks for listening, and Dobranich!